And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of July 26th, 2019. Today we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you, Mariah?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. Well, here in New England, we have a long tradition, very long tradition of having terrible winter snowstorms called nor'easters. And in the fall, we will occasionally encounter things called hurricanes that come roaring up the East Coast and wreak havoc because of high winds and rain and whatnot. But generally speaking, we all sit around here on watch TV, and what we look out is into the Great Plains in Kansas and all those places. What we look at is tornadoes out in the Midwest in Tornado Alley. We don't worry about tornadoes so much up here in New England. But it turns out over the past weekend on Cape Cod, there was in fact a tornado touchdown as a consequence of an extreme heat wave that has enveloped essentially the entire nation for the last several days. Mariah, did you see any of the heat wave? Did you experience it?
I went north.
Oh, okay.
I flew north
with the polar bears
for this summer. I went north and got a little bit away from the heat. Uh-huh. Was right next to the ocean, so that helped. But it was hot this weekend.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and I've seen these maps that show the heat index for the country, and it's like everything is dark red. Almost every place in the country besides the far west is over 100 degrees.
Yeah, I did not go north, and I was in an air-conditioned, I was also near the water, but I was in a non-air-conditioned building trying to sleep. 2 o'clock in the morning, you're literally dripping with sweat, and the my heart's racing. Because you're trying to cool your body off. All of a sudden, dawned on me the risk that people are at in urban places, people that don't have air conditioning, hot, and the stress on your body is real. And so the risk of these extreme heat waves is real. And it turns out there's an article in Think Progress basically calling out the fact that these things are only going to get worse. And one of the things that struck me was that it said that this article in Think Progress said that by the end of the century we're in, there will be what they call monstrous heat waves with a heat index, that is to say the combination of the humidity and the temperature, is 131 degrees, which is fatal.
Wow.
And that kind of thing is going to happen every other year. You know, for a period, a few days every other year at the end of the century. So, that's an appalling kind of circumstance that we're headed towards, right? If we don't do stuff, right? If we don't take action. 131 degrees in humidity is like being in a sauna, right? If you're going to live in a sauna for 24 hours a day, that's pretty bad.
Yeah, and I think that it's sort of this dual threat of power outages that can roll in when you have this sort of demand on energy. And that was one of my big concerns is, we're fine if we have fans and air conditioning, we can get through it. But if you don't have AC, we can't adapt. We're not going to, our evolution's not going to kick in fast enough to make us withstand that kind of temperature. And so,
Well, speaking of power outages, you mentioned before that something called Shave the Peak, which is a program here, Mariah. What do you know what it's about? You said you signed up for it.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I signed up for text message alerts, and basically they kind of say, hey, we've got peak energy use coming up. Do everything you can to limit your energy use between the hours of 4 and 8 p.m. I got one of those, I think, on Friday. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that when energy demand is the highest, that's when we start going into the dirtiest fossil fuels. That's when we burn the coal and the really high emissions fossil fuels. And so during those hours, just divert everything you can. Don't use, only use the bare minimum of electricity. Mm-hmm. And So that's what we did. We really were careful about that.
I mean, I'll put up a link to it, but they have an actual program. You sign up, you get text messages, and you're right. It's to minimize the most polluting power sources that are called into service when the demand is at a peak on the hottest days when everyone's running their air conditioning. So I guess to come back to where we started, the idea that a heat wave in New England would be sufficiently intense to create tornadic conditions in a place like Cape Cod, which is not the open plains of Kansas, where you can get, you know, broad miles and miles of open space for the air to start spinning. You're in a very rough terrain. To still get a tornado tells you something's going on, right? I mean, it's pretty conclusive, at least in my mind, having lived around these parts for a long time, that there's not many tornadoes on Cape Cod. Once you start getting tornadoes on Cape Cod, something has shifted. And to that end, there's in this Think Progress article, they quote Michael Mann, who's talking about a report that was published in 2016 talking about heat waves. But he said that the studies suggested that the recent temperature records are roughly 600 to 130,000 times more likely to have occurred due to climate change, right? So if you say, gee, the fact that we had a heat wave today is 130,000 times more likely because of climate change, well, that's pretty much attribution, as you and I have talked about. Yeah, we can pretty much say that heat wave is because of climate change. So yeah, anyway. But so there's this terrible heat wave that came through. Things are for real not good. And it can lead to a sense of frustration, anger, despair, all kinds of emotional responses to the fact that climate change is in the present. And I read an article, or actually, let me say, a person named Mary Anise Hegler, who writes now for Medium and is a outstanding climate voice, wrote a short piece that's quite beautiful. And the name of the piece is The Greatest of These is Love. And it really encapsulates sort of the range of emotions that come into play when people start talking about climate change. And she puts it into, basically says, it all boils down to love in a sort of mature Gandhian sense of loving the world. And that can justify and lead to all kinds of other emotions, actions, and that power of love is enough to smash through what would apparently be impossible kind of constraints. That's a very desiccated way of putting an emotionally moving article, Mariah. Tell me, did you read it? I mean, what do you think of what?
Yeah, it comes to me as this sort of, when you love something so strongly, you can get that rush of strength to move the car off of the top of, you know, right? I mean, that strength that comes through, or you find these superhuman abilities. And to me, it sort of seems like she's saying, I love this planet that we have so strongly that I'm reaching toward love to find those superhuman abilities to protect it and to do everything I can to keep all of the beauty that I know within and everything that I love within reach. And, you know, she has these beautiful quotes that she talks about. You know, she says, I love this beautiful, mysterious, complicated planet we get to call home, the planet who had the audacity to burst with life from her boreal crown to her icy toes at the South Pole. And she goes on to say, I love the unapologetic sass of butterflies and hummingbirds and coral reefs and the tear-jerking aroma of flowers that bloom below the equator. And so she just peppers the article with these beautiful descriptions of all of the things that make you love the planet. And
it's really quite moving. I mean, I agree, but we could read the whole thing. Maybe I need to get my wife, who has a beautiful reading voice, to just read the whole thing and we put it up. But she says, Marie Anise Hegler says, I don't mean any simple, sappy kind of love. I don't mean anything cute or tame. I mean living, breathing, heart-beating love, wild love. This love is not a noun. She is an action verb. She can shoot stars into the sky. She can spark a movement. She can sustain a revolution. It's really, yeah. It's really a great powerful. Read, and I think it's inspiring. I guess, but at the end of the day, all of the frustration, anger. She talks about her family, or you know, her aunt, or her mother, or somebody. I mean, this love. She says this love doesn't seek peace, or it doesn't seek vengeance. She seeks justice. And she's strong enough and ferocious enough and brave enough to make it happen. I mean, it's really quite a powerful. I highly recommend it to people. She is a voice. Marie Anise Hegler is a voice that I think is. We've talked about it now four or five different kind of articles.
Yeah.
Right?
I was going to say, you know, we talked about her on our episode June 7th, which if you haven't heard it, I highly recommend it, dear listeners. But we talked about her article she wrote, which was called "I Work in the Environmental Movement and I Don't Care If You Recycle." And it really drove home the point of it's personal climate guilt versus corporate mm-hmm. climate guilt, and the importance of taking a stand and doing individual action that really causes influences, causes a ripple effect. And sure, recycling can be part of that, but the bigger things you can do are getting involved in talking about climate change and being involved in collective movement to hold corporate entities accountable for their emissions, since the corporate emissions are the ones that are causing most mm-hmm. of the problem in you know, greenhouse gas and global warming, greenhouse gas emissions and global warming. So that we kind of discussed that article, and I was excited to see something new come out from her.
I mean, she wrote an article in January, I think, basically making the argument that the civil rights movement in America, the state of people of color in this country has seemed, from the perspective of being in the 1880s in backwoods of Mississippi someplace, it was an emergency, an existential crisis there was no way out of, right? And she makes the case that, the lily white environmental movement that's thinking that climate change is the worst thing, the existential crisis of mankind, that we can take a lesson from the people of color who have faced these sort of insurmountable crises for 200 years and have if not triumph, have survived and found ways to fight back, and we would do well to pay attention to that. Again, I mean, I think she has this sort of quirky, great perspective that is
really provocative and unique. She definitely comes at things with just really fresh ideas and a fresh lens. It's really great fun to read her work.
So we'll put up a link to that. But I think that, I mean, so okay, so you've got all the crazy high temperature, the heat, right? And you say, well, the response to this is a expression of love and commitment to dealing with the problem, and then that raises the question of what the heck can you what can you do? I saw a tweet from Bill McKibben, who recommended an article in Yes Magazine, which I guess I have to admit I'm not that familiar with, but Yes Magazine basically said, if you're worried about the climate crisis, you know, what can you do? And one of the things that they quote a person named Susan Clayton is saying is that getting involved with a group can lift up your climate-related anxiety, right? Because you get to work with other people that share the same ideas, reinforce your concerns, and make you feel empowered. So joining a group is a good thing, right? Would you agree with that, Mariah?
Absolutely, and it harkens back to what Marianne Hegler was mentioning, which is the best individual action is one that's amplified and moves in collective ways to really talk about climate change. And this article is sort of like a perfect follow-on to Marianne Hegler's first article about the, you know, I don't care if you work if you recycle. And it goes through and basically says, what kind of a person are you? Here's the environmental organization that you can join to have, you know, a collective group of maybe new friends and also people who feel about similarly to you. Curtail the climate blues.
So do you have the list in front of you? You take the evens, I'll take the odds.
Yeah, well, it's a good list. I highly recommend it. And in fact, reading it, I was thinking, I should probably join one of these. I mean, I do a lot with 350.org, the first one they talk about is Citizens Climate Lobby, which is a great organization, they say, for a bipartisan approach.
And then there's one that talks about the alliance. So she says, if you're a bipartisan person, hates conflict, wants everyone to get along, then go join the Citizens Climate Lobby, whose mandate and goal in life is to get Republicans and Democrats together on proposing a climate tax. If you're an educator and you want to teach people, well, there's the Alliance for Climate Education. I mean, if that's the thing you resonate with, right, then you can do that. Mariah, you said you're ready to take to the streets, right? You should join 350.org, right?
Yeah,
if that's your mood, you want to go, look at the Extinction Rebellion people, right? They are literally sitting down in the middle of London and hoping for some sort of similar thing here. I mean, if that's, again, there's a place for everyone to fit in, right?
Yeah, and certainly in terms of that, back to that, the education and students, of course, there's Greta Thunberg, and they're tracking metrics for, if you decide you want to protest and not attend school, you can list it on their website, and they're keeping track of all of the students who are saying, we want a place to use our education in the future. One of the other ones they talk about, they mentioned Mom's Clean Air Force for, she says, for a fierce mama or papa bear. But I'd like to say also Mothers Out Front, which is has a fantastic, strong, amazing local chapter here in Massachusetts.
And there, Mothers Out Front is really pushing the Weymouth compressor issue, right? They're heavily involved in that.
They've done a lot of good work.
I mean, one of them is, if you find yourself as a spiritual or religious person, many, I think at this point, almost all major religions have a climate action program, right? You can find like-minded people through where you go to church on Sunday, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And also Interfaith Power and Light is a really strong, amazing organization.
Right. You've got, there's one, if you're older and want to fight for climate, there's the Elder Climate Action group, right? There are chapters all around of Elders Climate Action.
Which, by the way, they say that the members are 55 and older, and I'm thinking 55 is an elder?
Yeah, well, there you go. I mean, one of the interesting ones here is the way the article is stated. If you prefer working with people who share your culture, right? If you're a person of color, working with white progressives may not feel comfortable, right? But there's lots and lots of places that, and this is, you and I have talked at some length about environmental justice, right? That there are, we need to stand together, right? But again, there are places for everyone to find somewhere to take action. There's one that says, this is the one I like the best. If you have more money than time, right, which I don't, but I mean, if I did have more money than time, I'd say, okay, find some group and give them some money, right? If that's how you resonate with all these things. And the 10th one I wanted to mention, which they somehow didn't make the list here, I just didn't want to talk about it. The 10th one is that you could join the Massachusetts Climate Action Network, right, because MCAN appeals to its own kind of group of people. MCAN focuses on chapters that are trying to change cities and towns. So if you're a local person who likes to work with your local town government, wants to see a local action, MCAN is your organization.
Yeah, and just to go back to, you mentioned, for if you're a person of color, the Hip Hop Caucus is a great organization. Mm-hmm. I've heard there back in 2015, that Reverend Lennox Yearwood Jr. spoke for them, and he was really, really moving, really interesting person speak. So that's a great option too.
So there you go. There's the trajectory. There's where it goes. We go from too much heat to love for the planet and your fellow man and determination to take action to some specific kind of things. You look in the mirror and say, what kind of person am I? I'm a person that likes to fill in the blank, and you can find a climate activity to make yourself feel better about climate change, right?
No climate malaise here.
No climate malaise here. All right. Well, we got to put it down there. Mariah, we'll put up links to what we talked about here at the blog. It's massclimateaction.org/blog. Of course, you can find us on Facebook at /massclimateaction. You can listen to us on your smartphone using most of the major podcast distribution apps, including Spotify. Please, if you have an idea of something you want to hear about, send us a letter at podcast@massclimateaction.net. That's podcast@massclimateaction.net. So we're going to close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our collective future. So, Mariah, thank you so much for being here.
Always a pleasure.
Hey, everybody out there in podcast land, stay cool, okay? We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.